This is Saturday afternoon, June 26th. I'm still alone. Norma has now been in Utah for a little over 3 weeks. I think she'll be home either Monday or Tuesday. I've finished most of my chores today, with the exception of a little bit of watering that needs to be done when it cools off a little bit outside. But it occurs to me that this might be propitious time to begin this long procrastinated autobiography. I've been thinking a lot about it and trying to remember details and times and dates and so on. And maybe I can make a little sense out of it now. However, to begin with, I might add the news items that would otherwise appear in tomorrow's letter. I haven't been as busy as I thought I might be this week. Most of my time has been taken up with scrounging around to make sure that both of my summer classes go. The grammar class is very precarious to begin with. I had only 13 students, and we needed 20 in order to make the class go. But again, the administration was on my side and wanted to have the class because it's something that these students really need. And so we all worked together and eventually brought the class up to 18. And now it looks as if it's going to go. While it was questionable, I was wondering what we would do about a vacation, because without both of those classes, it would be doubtful that we could realize the plans that we've made. But now it looks as if all is set, and I guess we can say again that the Lord has blessed us. I guess he wants us to come back and get together with you again this summer. We were pleased to receive your letter yesterday, Valerie, and to especially to learn that everything's all right with the baby. Your earlier letters had made us worry a bit, but now that she's gaining in weight and feeling good, we're certainly relieved. Hope you don't mind the cuckoo clock along with this too. It's certainly been lonesome around here. Most of my spare time has been taken up with checking papers. My composition class is quite a large one. So when I get a set of papers from that one, it's a day's work to get them finished and ready to return. But it looks as if it's going to be a pleasant summer. I went out to the pool this morning for the first time, and that was delightful. I'm certainly going to have to do that more often. And the next time you come, be sure you have your bathing suits with you so that you can take advantage. You can get into it almost any time of the year, because in the wintertime it's heated, and of course in the summertime the sun does the heating. We're still much concerned about Roger. He's been moved from the critical to the serious list. But whether he'll ever be his own self again is very questionable. and we're certainly sad. It's a real tragedy to see someone so, such a fine person, made such a tremendous contribution to this community, a victim of stupidity of this kind. So we don't quite know what we're going to do out there this next year, whether he'll be able to resume his work or not. It's a real question. Again, with regard to our vacation, we've been toying with the idea of delaying it until Scott's wedding and then leaving immediately after that. But I don't know whether we'll do it that way or not. We don't want to be on your hands too long and wear out our welcome. And yet we want to be there long enough to justify the long trip back there. But we have another 5 weeks to make up our minds on this score. So now for the story. I was born in Ephraim, Utah, May the 19th, 1913. My parents were Francis Emmanuel Anderson and Anna Eloise Poulsen. My birthplace was a very humble little house, a block north and a block east of the old family home in Ephraim, in a house that belonged to my great-grandmother, Grandpa Anderson's stepmother, whom we all referred to as Old Grandma. I don't remember her, but I've been told that she and I had a very warm and close relationship, that she loved me dearly. And I'm sure that if I could reach back that far into my memory, I would remember that I reciprocated her feelings, because I've been told that we spent a lot of time together. Incidentally, this house no longer stands. It was located on property that now is part of the campus of Snow College. We lived in this house, and Dad did farming for my first 2 years. And then he received a position with the Indian Service of the federal government, and we moved to Northern California. And over the next two and a half years, we lived between the two communities of Alturas and Fort Vidor. I have vague memories of these towns, of associating with Indian children. I think about the first clear-cut memory I have is my mother cooling the tapioca pudding out in the snow, because in that area of California we had lots of snow. I remember two of the Indian children pulling me on their sled, or on my sled possibly it was. During this time, Mother was stricken by a severe case of appendicitis, and I remember we boarded the train and took her back to Salt Lake, where she was operated on at the LDS Hospital and we spent some time in Salt Lake with relatives while she was recuperating. And then we went back, and as I remember in 1917, Dad was transferred to White Rocks out in Duchesne County in Utah. I remember some of the bleak conditions under which we lived for a relatively short time there. And then Dad had an opportunity to work as a clerk in one of the coal mines in Carbon County, up what was then known as Spring Canyon. The mine was called Rains, and we moved there in late 1917 or 1918. I'm not sure of the dates here. I do remember that we were living there when World War I came to an end, because I remember the great celebration that that we enjoyed as a result of that, for the end of those 4 years of hostilities. This condition under which we lived there was interesting in a way. We lived up in the mountains, and I loved to explore the mountain areas around there. There were many caves and forests. In the spring and summertime, the wildflowers were beautiful on the hillsides, and I remember many times bringing bouquets of those flowers home to Mother. And one rather grim incident occurred when I was 7 years old. Another little boy and I had gone down to a garage that was located beside the railroad tracks near the tipple. And in that garage was a motorcycle up on its stand. And I dearly loved to get up on the seat of that motorcycle and pretend that I was riding it. And once climbing up onto it, I became overbalanced. The motorcycle and I fell over. It landed on my right leg and broke it. The other little boy with me was frightened. He ran home to Mother and told her that I'd been hit by a car. And of course, that was almost more than she could stand. So she got hold of Dad and they found some other help and came down and took me to the office of Dr. Estes. I remember his name. And he set my leg and put it in a cast. But the leg didn't mend very well. And eventually we went to Salt Lake. And it was set, as I remember the description of it, under x-ray. That must have been under fluoroscope at St. Mark's Hospital. And I was on crutches for some time, and of course that gave me a certain amount of status among the other kids in the area, and they were willing to fetch and carry for me. And I must say that I took every advantage of my position that I could at that time. But eventually I recovered. And I suppose something ought to be said about my schooling there. Although this was a rather primitive area, there were some real advantages We had a fine school building. I remember it was a two-story building built of stone. Good and solid. Had four rooms in it. And each of those rooms housed one of the first eight grades. Or housed two, rather, of the first eight grades. And my first teacher was Lee Kay, who eventually became the state game commissioner in Utah, and to this day is a good friend of the family. My second grade teacher was his wife, Leah, whom he married between my first and second years, and she was a fine teacher too. I got a good start from these people and from the others who followed them through the first 5 years of my schooling there. I remember back in the kinds of experiences that I had in that school. They were solid. I learned to spell. I learned to read. I've never had any trouble spelling. And to a great extent, I attribute it to the basic training that I had there. And although I've never done very much with mathematics in my professional life, I did get a solid foundation in the basic principles of arithmetic and mathematics. And so I had no complaints about my schooling during that period. I've already talked about my propensity for exploring. My best companion on those explorations was my dog. We had a series of them. The first one was a little spitz by the name of Winnie. She was a lovely little white thing, and she gave us a whole series of the families. Eventually the one that we settled on was her son, whose father was a full-blooded collie, and he was a beautiful thing and really a wonderful family dog. The other kids called him Poi, because Claire, who came along about the same time that the dog did, or just a little bit before, couldn't say puppy, and it turned out to be Poi, and so he kept that name all the rest of his life. He lived about 8 years. But when I finished the fifth grade, Mother and Dad decided that I should have a little better opportunity for an education, so they sent me down to Price to live with the family of the principal of the elementary school, Charles Madsen, who had been a boyhood friend of Dad in Ephraim. And the Madsens were wonderful to me. They treated me just as if I were one of their own children. Dad would bring me down there on Sunday evening and leave me there and come back and get me on Friday evening. So I'd have the weekends at home and the 5 days at school in Price. In a way, I remember this as a traumatic situation, because I was so frightfully homesick, even though the family were only 15 miles away. In those days, that seemed a long distance, and I remember just about every Sunday night I would cry myself to sleep, because I did miss the family. But I finished the year, and I remember The most difficult situation I had with that year was my teacher, Carmen Lewis, who was a stickler for penmanship. And penmanship has never been my long suit. I remember more than once I had to stay in after school and practice my Palmer Method ovals. The kids these days know nothing about that because they write any way they wish to. But back in those days, penmanship was part of the school curriculum, and we really made a big thing of it. But otherwise, the year was pleasant. And in the meantime, the folks acquired some property in Price and began building a house on it. So that when that house was finished in 1927, they moved down there, and we had 1 year of a very happy situation in a home that we had built ourselves. It was a brick house. The rooms were not large, but it had a large basement, and we enjoyed it very much. Dad was still working as chief clerk at one of the coal mines up there. He had moved from Raines to Mutual by this time, and this necessitated his commuting, which was not good. Back in those days, with the conditions of the roads and everything, commuting 15 miles was a real problem. I suppose at this point I ought to backtrack a little bit and say something about the other members of the family. In 1919, our second baby was born into the family, and he was given the name of Francis Joseph. And he was born on the 28th of May, and I remember him as a very, very delightful baby, happy and a lovely child in every way. And we were all so thrilled that he had come to join the family, because after mother's operation, she had been told that she would have no more children. And so his arrival was a case of a real joy. But he stayed with us only 10 months. In the spring of 1920, we went to Ephraim, and while we were there, he contracted pneumonia and died. And we were really, really stricken, because we had had such high hopes for this wonderful little boy. But 2 years later, another boy was born to us, and mother and dad gave him the name of Milton Clare. 2 years after that, 1924, our girl came to join the family, Ruth Eloise, and of course we were very proud of her because she was the only girl in the family. And so we were a very close family. We had our problems. Most of them, I suppose, could have been eliminated if I had not been such an independent soul and such a tyrant with the children, really. I can look back on it now and recognize that I was. I suppose the gap of 8 years between Claire and me made it difficult for for us to relate very closely together. And so I must take much responsibility for the differences that existed there. However, Ruth has always been close to us, to both of us, and she's very dear to us now. I should mention at this point that I was baptized in the little community of Storrs, which was the name of the town where the Spring Canyon Coal Company operated. This is about 4 miles from where we lived, and I remember that we walked those 4 miles down to the little chapel, which was the only one in the area there that had a baptismal font. And that's where I was baptized. Incidentally, I had been blessed by my great-grandfather, Andrew Thompson, Grandma Anderson's father. So let's get back to the conditions as they existed when we lived in Price. During this time, Dad became associated on a part-time basis with an insurance company, and while he was chief clerk at the coal mines, this came to be a very, very profitable enterprise. And so he decided to leave the mine and to take over the Salt Lake agency of this company. And so we sold the home in Price and moved to Salt Lake, where we found a home to rent on Redondo Avenue, which is just north of the First Avenue, north of 21st South, just east of 5th East. So this was a delightful experience for me. I had always enjoyed going to Salt Lake. I'd always had a feeling for a large city, and it was a real thrill for me to go to Salt Lake. And loving a large city as I did, I came more and more to dislike small towns. And so I was delighted to be able to live for a while in Salt Lake City. I remember that summer, I went up to Idaho to visit Aunt Leota and Uncle Bert Bolingbroke. And while there, I played a good deal with one of my cousins, Earl Poulsen. And another kid came to play with us one day and asked me where I lived. And I said, I live in Salt Lake. And he said, oh, a city slicker. And I remember the feeling of elation that I had at that time in being characterized as a city slicker. That was really something. But this was not to continue for very long. The business didn't go well. And Dad finally had to give it up. In fact, in the fall of 1928, he gave it up and we left Salt Lake and moved to Ephraim, back to Ephraim again. And Dad got a job in another coal mine, this time inside the mine. These were hard days. This was on the threshold of the Great Depression, and things were becoming more and more difficult. But I remember the humble little house that we rented in Ephraim. I think our rent was $8 a month, as I remember. It was adobe house, and certainly not much. And that was a difficult year, because we had no money. Just about everything that we could put together went simply to keep body and soul together. Dad was living under very difficult conditions down in the mine in Salina Canyon, and we were trying to hang together in Ephraim. Grandpa helped us all that he could, and we really owe him a tremendous debt of gratitude for all the assistance that he gave us during these difficult times. And so I had my first year of high school, the ninth grade, in Ephraim. And it was a good year. Again, I remember the schools as being very solid. I had ninth grade English with Uncle Orrin, and he was a fine teacher. That year I took algebra with another relative, biology with still another one, and I took seminary, studying the Old Testament with Newton Noyes, who had also taught Dad when he went to school there. Well, we realized that it was too far from Salina to Ephraim, and so the next year, the next summer, we moved down to Salina. I think I ought to mention at this point, though, the Christmas of that difficult year, because although it was very meager, in a sense it was one of the sweetest Christmases that I can remember in my entire lifetime. Because all the gifts that we received, Mother and Dad made themselves. Dad made me a bobsled. And I remember how proud I was of that. It was a good one, and we had a lot of fun with it, hooking it on behind the car and going down those snow-covered streets in Ephraim. And I forget what it was that he made for Claire. He made a cradle for Ruth's doll. I do remember that. So this was something pretty special. And an indication of the love and concern that Mother and Dad had for us as kids. Well, I remember the move down to Salina. Salina's about 25 miles, as I remember, from Ephraim, maybe a little farther than that. And we did it with a team and wagon, moving our furniture, what furniture we had left after all of these moves. And it took many, many hours to cover that distance. And then we moved into the Ivy home in Salina, two blocks south of the main intersection of town. Remember, there were a lot of trees around the place. Again, it was a rock house, and so it was delightful to be cool in the summertime. But it didn't have much in the line of comfort. The plumbing was out in the backyard, and it was very primitive.
But we enjoyed it there, in a sense, because we had some of the things that we wanted. This is the time when I began to grow up. I was a sophomore in high school at that time. And my school experience in Salina was good. This was a time that I began to be interested in dramatics. And in the 2 years that I was there at North Sevier High School, I had the lead in every school play that was put on. I look back on this as really the beginning of an element of self-realization. Because prior to that time, I had not thought that somehow that I would ever amount to much. I look back on that in introspection, and I feel that that was a specter that faced me. And somehow, in this experience, in dramatics, I think I found myself. And from there on, my grades continued to improve, and I began to excel in most of the school subjects that I took. And so I began to anticipate an eventual professional career of some kind. I had struck up an acquaintance and a close friendship with Bud Murphy in Salina, and Bud wanted to be a doctor. And I suppose because of all the talking that he did about it, I thought that I would like to be a doctor too. But I didn't. The depression and I didn't get along in this regard, so things changed within the next few years. But I did well enough during my 2 years of school there that I completed enough credit to enroll in college the next year. And so I did enroll as a freshman at Snow College in Ephraim. But the fortunes of the family changed again. This job that Dad had didn't amount to very much, and so he went back to Carbon County, and we moved up to an area called National. And Dad went into the mine again. And so, when I anticipated going to Ephraim to school, the question was, where in the world would I live? And again, dear old Grandpa came to my rescue, and I went to live at the old family home. Grandma had died back in 1923, and Grandpa had been alone for a number of years. During this time, he had spent much of his time as an ordnance worker in the Manti Temple, and there he met Zeta Miriam, who had never been married, and eventually they were married. Zeta was a strange person. She never quite seemed to fit into the family, although she did try. And there I was, living in the old home with Grandpa and Zeta and Aunt Eva, Dad's younger sister, who had been an invalid most of her life. It was a rather difficult relationship, And yet they really try to provide for me those things that would help me. And so, because of their kindness and their generosity, I finished that first week, or that first year, rather, at Stowe College. And it was in that year also that I made the finest and most lasting friendship of my life. I remember in the chemistry lab at Stowe College, one day performing an experiment, a young fellow came over and we struck up a conversation. I learned that his name was J. Bruce Ellis, that he lived in Spring City, and that he had finished high school in 3 years also, and had come to Snow for these 2 years. And now I look back on 46 years of the most wonderful friendship that could come to two people, two men who are not related to each other.
These are great, because they're not.
We've been close in all of the aspects of our lives. We've traveled together, we've raised our children together, and we've suffered tragedy together. And I'm tremendously grateful for the association that we've had. In fact, the second year that we were at Snow, when the family finally moved back there, moved back to Ephraim, Bruce came and lived with us for a good part of the winter. And we enjoyed that opportunity to have him there with us too. The Christmas vacation of that freshman year at Snow was something that I won't forget very soon, because I spent the whole Christmas vacation working in the mine. The funds were very meager, and so I made enough money during that time to pay my tuition for the second semester at Snow College. And so I finished that first year, and as I mentioned, in the meantime, the folks moved back to Ephraim. And so I had the opportunity to live with the family as I completed my second year of school. I graduated from Snow College in 1932, and then there was a big question as to what I would do after that. Because once again, we moved. And this time, the family moved down to the coal mine in Salina Canyon. I remember Mother and Dad lived in a one-room house. I guess you could call it a house. It had frame sides and a tent roof. And Dad worked in the mine, and Mother cooked for 60 men three times a day. And this was really taxing on her. But we had made up our minds in that time that I should go to BYU. And as always, no sacrifice was too great for them to provide these opportunities for me. In all this time that Dad worked there, though, he received no money. He received credit. His money was on the books, but there was no money to pay him. This was right in the worst time of the Depression. And so, I remember, toward the end of the summer, we took a trip to Provo and met with President Franklin S. Harris. And Dad proposed that he send to BYU a car of coal, which should pay for my first year's tuition. And President Harris accepted. And so that's how I got into BYU. At least that paid my tuition for the year. The car of coal was worth approximately the amount of the tuition. And I left Ephraim just before school started on the bus for Provo, having no idea of where I would live when I got there. I had a few dollars with me, not very many, to purchase books and to take care of a month's board and room, but where the board and room was, I had no idea. Well, as the bus left Ephraim and went through Fountain Green, another young fellow got on, a fellow by the name of Joe Robertson, who was the brother of Leroy Robertson of the music department of BYU. Leroy Robertson was in Europe during that year studying music. And so Joe was living at his home, and they had room for one more. And so, as you might guess, I moved in with the family of Leroy Robertson, his wife, her sister, who cooked for all of us, and their two little children. And that was really a pleasant year. Joe and I never got very close. He always had a lot of money, and we didn't operate in the same circles, but it was a good relationship, and we shared our room and had many good experiences together. But Bud Murphy had come to BYU at that time, and he recommended me to become a member of the Brigadier Social Unit. And there I met some of the fine young people that I associated with during my years at BYU. The McGuires, Ray and Jim and John, Bill Hassler, Levi Reynolds, all great, great young men. And each one of them, in his own way, touched my life for good. As I went to BYU in the fall of 1932, Bruce left for a mission to Germany, and so I didn't see him until for 2.5 years. And then in that time, I finished BYU, and he enrolled there. So our school experience together was limited to our 2 years at Snow. But We kept up a constant correspondence during the time that he was on his mission. And when he returned, we picked up where we had left off. One other circumstance of my early life might be interesting to add at this point. If we go back to 1923, this was the year that we purchased our first automobile. It was a four-cylinder Buick. And my, were we proud of that. That really put us in a different social status. But this old car, or this car, had its problems. And we kept it for only about 6 months. And then we traded it for a six-cylinder Buick. And that one we kept until it finally gave out in 1933, I guess it was. And I learned to drive it when I was 12 years old. In fact, I drove from Price to Salt Lake once when I was 12 years old. Back in those days, we didn't need a license to drive, and there were no age limits. And so I can remember the elation that I felt in being able to drive that automobile. On many occasions, I drove it on dates. Dad was very generous and understanding in this regard, and it was a real source of joy and pleasure. The automobiles that came after that were more consistent with the new lifestyle that developed during the latter part of the 30s and into the 40s. But I remember those two cars particularly because they formed a turning point for us in our life. The last year I was at Snow, I took German because I was still anticipating a medical career. And back in those days, all doctors took Latin and German. Latin wasn't being taught there, so I took German. And I became so delighted with the language, enjoyed it so much, and found it so easy that when I went to BYU, I saw the handwriting on the wall that a medical career was just about out of the question. And so I changed my major to education with a specialization in foreign languages. So when I enrolled at BYU, I enrolled in advanced German and elementary French. And I remember in the French class that fall was a beautiful dark-haired little girl that sat over by the window in this room in the Heber J. Grant Library. I remember such a lovely personality and such a happy person, and really one that was beautiful. I learned that she was the daughter of one of the professors at the Y, but we formed a nodding and a hello acquaintance, and that was about all. But of course, later events brought her much closer into my life. But during the 2 years I was at the Y, I gave up drama. Maybe it was a mistake. I don't know. because I took such a heavy course of all solid subjects that would enable me to finish in those 2 years and then hopefully to be able to get a job. And so I didn't go in for activities at all. In fact, I didn't participate in the church as much as I should have been. I certainly look back on it now as something that I lost during that time. But I did finish and graduate in 1934 with honors. During that time, during all of my 4 years, I received nothing lower than a B. And most of my subjects were A's. So I was hoping then during that summer to be able to find a job, a teaching job, and begin my career. But there were no jobs to be had. I'm sure I contacted every possible outlet, but there were no teaching jobs in the summer of 1934. And as I look back on it now, I must add, fortunately. Because that fall, with the help of my great mentor and friend, Garrett DeYoung at BYU, I received a fellowship to teach one class of German while I received my master's degree. And for this I was to receive my tuition and $20 a month. But at least it was the key to this advanced degree, which has been a real asset to me ever since. Well, I think I'll discontinue this chapter now, and we'll pick it up later on. I see the papers is just about gone. Well, see what you think of this, and make any suggestions that you would like, and then I'll continue at another time. Bye bye. Love you much.